Last time I checked, I think you guys handed us the L in the finals. So, I mean, I don't know where that comes from, but
it's one man and one man only that that caused it, I think.
Well, welcome back, everybody. This is Aaron Washington coming back at you guys for episode 130 of the Business Casual Basketball Podcast. As always, super excited to have you guys on the mic, watching by video or listening. Either way, glad you're here and excited to jump back into the world of basketball, which is pretty insane right now. As we know, there's a couple of teams, or at least a couple, underperforming right now. But to help me kind of diagnose the problems that are afflicting two teams in the NBA right now, Richard Stayman is on the podcast, guys. He is a credentialed NBA draft analyst. He is the co-host of the Mavs Draft Podcast. And he's also a sneakerhead for anybody out there that's interested in the shoe game. I'm definitely one of those people. So we definitely have a lot in common on that end. But Richard, thanks so much for joining me, man. Glad to have you back on this podcast. It's been a minute. But I'm glad to bring up somebody that is kind of can share my pain a little bit as somebody that's dealing with a team that's underperforming in the NBA so far. But hope you're doing well, man, and glad to have you back on the podcast.
Yeah, dude, it's been a minute since I've been on. I'm really happy to be back. Obviously, wish the circumstances were a little bit better, all things considered, both with COVID and team performance and why I'm here. But I'm excited.
Yeah, thanks for joining me, man. I really appreciate your time. And yeah, as you said, wish the circumstances were a little bit better, but at least we have some common ground. We can kind of share in the paint together and look at some ways that our teams might improve going forward for the rest of the season. So now, Richard, let's get into it, man. It's time to diagnose some of the problems that are afflicting Miami and Dallas. So let's go ahead and get into Miami's situation and look at what they're dealing with right now. Their record is 7-14 as of the time of this recording. This is February 4th, and they are coming off of a disappointing loss to the Washington Wizards. Definitely didn't like to see that. Miami's Twitter last night kind of self-imploded, as we talked about a little bit earlier, so I definitely steered clear of that. But what stood out to me is just how much time other players have missed so far. I went through their whole roster, added up the amount of games they've missed, and there's only two players in the entire roster that have played all 21 games so far. That's Duncan Robinson and Precious Achiuwa. And everybody else has missed multiple games. That goes to Myers Leonard, who is out for the season. He's only played 3 games. Dragic has missed 5. Hero's missed 7. Harkless has missed 12. Jimmy Butler missed 12. Most of those are because of COVID. Avery Bradley has missed 11. And of course, you know, there's some guys that are out long term, and then some guys are dealing with some various injuries. Avery Bradley, Dragic, Hero, and Gabe Vincent are all day to day as of this recording. So that's what stood out to me first. And, you know, they only ranked 26th in offensive efficiency, 21st in defensive efficiency, and 27th in net rating. So definitely some drop offs from last season. And I have to say that offense really strikes me more than the defense, because they ranked 7th there last year. And it was really elite for them. You know, they were, you know, almost unstoppable at times last season due to the shooting and everything else. So not sure how much of the Heat you've seen so far, Richard, this season. But just from some of those numbers I pointed out, and maybe some numbers that you've seen, like, is anything really strike you as something that's surprising or just like really out of the blue here when it comes to Miami's performance so far?
Yeah, I mean, we're hearing the same thing when we talk about Dallas. But I mean, the 3-point shooting, it feels like it's been really hit or miss. I mean, Kelly Olynyk is taking, what, 6 threes a game, yep, and is hitting way below league average. I mean, I think last night he went 2 of 9, and that was a huge – that's, you can't afford that when one of your best shooters is just not shooting. Mm-hmm. That, I think, is the biggest thing. I really do think that 3-point shooting, it's a league where it's a make-or-miss league. Obviously, it's cliche, but mm-hmm. When you live and die by the three as much as the modern NBA is, that's – the area you have to improve in. And while Duncan Robinson is still like 41%, something like that, if I'm not mistaken, it's hard when you don't have it all clicking.
It really is, man. And to point out that 3-point shooting that you highlighted here, they're only 35% on three so far this season, which, you know, sounds okay, but compared to last season, I mean, that's almost a 3% drop from where they finished last season, you know, so that puts them far below where they were last season. You know, they were one of the best teams. I think they were just below Utah for team 3-point percentage. So that drops them from elite down to, I think, maybe like average, maybe even below average. So definitely didn't see that coming, you know, because you look at the roster and you see 3-point threats from all over the floor. Tyler Hero, Duncan Robinson, Dragic has been a good 3-point shooter for many years now. Kelly Olynyk has kind of sold himself as a stretch big, same for Myers Leonard. And those pieces haven't really come together. I think that Maurice Harkless is another source of one of the sources of the struggles there. I mean, he was marketed as a 3-and-D player coming in. That's what Miami was looking for when they signed him in free agency. And that hasn't materialized yet. He's underperformed on that end. And so have a lot of other pieces. I mean, Tyler Hero specifically, I expected him to come out and, you know, maybe be close to 40%. And those things are quite coming together yet. So that's, you know, it's not going to get you far in the NBA when you can't shoot, no matter how good you are in other areas of the floor. That's just how much of an emphasis it is now in today's game. So disappointing to say the least.
Yeah. And I mean, like you said, Tyler Hero was a guy that I think everybody who watched any minute of playoffs bubble expected to be a lot better than he is now, which is crazy because he's still averaging 17-4. So like he's doing really well. It's just the efficiency just isn't there from three, which I feel like the second he starts getting hot, which he's going to overcompensate for the numbers they'll average out. Like he's going to have a really hot stretch where I'd imagine he gets some 30 pieces in there, gets some high 3-point volume games. And I think that's where you're going to see Miami kind of turn the corner. I really do think like him, I mean, it's simple to say, but the 3-point shooting is going to be what turns the team around. Like I think if Hero gets going and he gets hot from three, you're going to see a winning streak from Miami. Like, do you think that's fair to say?
Absolutely. It's, you know, it seems kind of like a simple diagnosis, but that's what it comes down to a lot of times. I mean, I want to use the Milwaukee Heat game as an example from way back. I think it was in the first 2 weeks of the season. You know, one of those games, they lost by 40. And a big reason for that was Milwaukee could not miss. You know, TNT game, nationally televised game. I mean, oh my, I don't know how many times I've seen a 3-point performance like that. Maybe never. Like, because I think they made 29. I want to say they set an NBA record for.
Yeah, it was the NBA record. Yep.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, that just goes to show you, like, if your shooting is on point, like, you really have players that are not just shooters by the reputation, but the numbers back that up, then it changes your whole offensive outlook. And, you know, we're going to get into Dallas's situation. I mean, they're suffering from a similar problem right now. But, you know, it really is going to drag down your offense when you can't generate good looks from that end of the floor. Another area that stood out to me, honestly, is the offensive rebounding. And, again, this is something that Dallas is struggling with. And when you're talking about defense, you have to be able to keep the team off the glass from getting second chances. When you can't, you know, you're going to just the points just swell up for the other team. So minus 18% from last year, and they're dead last in that area. And also dead last in turnover percentage. So, I mean, if you're ranking last in significant statistics like that, geez, you're in bad shape.
Well, and Spoelstra is like one of the top coaches too with ball security. Is him? I always think of him, Steve Clifford, and Rick Carlisle are the top guys who they don't have their teams turn it over much. And I didn't know that it was that high. I had no clue that Miami was turning it over that much. And a lot of what you said, you're going to hear a lot of repeating stuff because everything you said before the turnovers, like excluding that, was very similar to Dallas. So I know that exact book.
Yep. Yeah. We're going to have a segment here in a little bit where we literally do like a parallels section. We just kind of compare the two teams, and it's crazy like how much they kind of really share in their struggles. But yeah, I mean, Miami's at 15.7 turnovers per game. I mean, like, geez, like if you're going to talk about short circuiting your offense, there is no easier way to do that than to cost yourself possessions through the game. If you can't even get a shot up, then of course, you know, your scoring throughout the game is going to suffer. And I mean, they've had some pretty low scoring games. I remember, you know, I'm sure you remember this one. Miami played Dallas, I believe it was New Year's Day. And I think Miami got like 83 points total in the game. And I just saw that. I was on a plane.
Like, so they won, but.
It's wild, man. Like I remember coming in from a flight. I was out in Denver visiting my parents, and I had just flown in, and I turned on my phone from airplane mode, and I was like, you know, is this the third quarter? Is my phone not caught up to the action yet? And it's like, that's a final score. I'm just like, well, geez, like what else can you say, man? Just a tough night, man. And it's just ironic they came against the Mavericks. So
yeah, no. And it's funny because that game and the Clippers 50-point massacre are the two games that hold the Mavs defense as to be way better than it actually is. Like, right. So we appreciate it, but that was brutal on the eyes. That was probably the least grateful I've been for a win in a very long time.
I mean, there are different types of wins. There are different types of losses. And that's one of the types of wins that doesn't give you a lot of confidence. You say we won, but did we really win? It was like, they lost because you know they scored 83 points. So there's different ways to look at that for sure. But I mean, yikes. So I mean, the percentages are drugged down, but I think some of that is because of the lack of continuity that Miami is finding in their lineups so far. You know, when you miss so many games due to injury and COVID and things like that, it costs you the opportunity to get synergy in your most used lineups. You know, you can't play a lot of minutes together. Their most used lineup is Tyler Hero, Duncan Robinson, Butler, Olynyk, and Adebayo. They actually have a pretty good rating, plus 13.3 net rating, but that's the only lineup in their whole team that's played more than 100 possessions together. Wow. So, I mean, for either team, I mean, when you're not getting guys on the same page and able to play together a lot, you have like 10, 15 different starting lineups. It's going to weigh you down. And I looked at the top 12 players in the rotation, and they've only played 155 out of a possible 252 games, like combined out of those 12 players. Dang. So it's tough sledding when it comes to availability right now. They haven't had their guys on the floor for a large amount of time to be able to just learn how to play together at a high level throughout the season.
Yeah, and I was kind of going to ask something about that, because you have KZ Apala. I still don't know if I'm saying it right. I never knew it at Stanford. I don't know it at Miami. But Apala, Strus, and Vincent was the third one. All three of those guys I didn't expect to be playing this much, and they've all played. I remember looking like they were all the same amount of games heading into today, I guess, right? Like something like that. Like they played a lot more than I think that you could have ever expected.
Yeah. I wasn't looking. I definitely didn't expect that going into the season. I mean, all three of those players are end of rotation. I mean, I'm definitely encouraged by Max Strauss's performance so far. I mean, he had 18 point half so far this season, and he's been a knockdown 3-point shooter and score another point for Miami's development staff. He came in there and he's really turned some heads as another marksman. Which Miami could use right now, considering their three-point percentage is so down. But yeah, that's another symptom of it. You force players with less experience to play more minutes, and they have bright spots, but ultimately they're going to get outplayed, because even compared to some second units out there, they're at a disadvantage because they haven't had the time to really get used to the NBA game. So it's definitely a struggle out there for guys that haven't seen the floor as much in their careers, and they're still trying to sort some things out. So you usually want to see that in garbage time. You want to see that when you're playing maybe lower tier teams, not against the Sixers, the Raptors, the Celtics, and teams like that that are sporting strong lineups. It's gonna have a domino effect for sure, any way you slice it.
Yeah, and I mean, kind of like you said, it's hard to get a rhythm going when I mean the schedule doesn't allow for it. It's a relentless circle that it just doesn't stop.
It really does kind of circulate. And something else, like we forget this also when it comes to the starting lineup. Leonard was their starting center for at least half of the season, I believe, last year. And now he's out for the season. And, I mean, he wasn't starting anyway, but it helped kind of solidify that void that was their power forward, because Bam occupied that spot a lot of the times. And then after that, it was like, okay, we can bring in Jay Crowder. You know, he can back up. Iggy can back up Iguodala a little bit, but now it's kind of like, wow, Bam has to play center. So now who is at the four? Like Harkless was a disaster for most of the season so far. He has been a disaster. Olynyk has had some good minutes, but he definitely has his shortcomings, especially defensively. Precious Achiuwa has had some good minutes, but I think Miami is hesitant to play those two together. That's a lack of shooting, and they can be exposed a little bit on that end. So yeah, I mean, it's just any way you slice it, like lineups are just kind of janky right now, for lack of a better term. It affects continuity, affects scoring defense. Any way you look at it, the rebounding suffers because they're undersized. So it's tough, man. And I can't even really say that it's because of a tough schedule either. Like that was one of my excuses earlier, but they've only played, I think, the 15th toughest schedule based on Positive Residual Twitter. He has this really cool calendar app. So yeah, tough sledding, man. It gets a little bit easier coming up here, but those are some troubling signs that I've seen so far. And I'm not sure it's going to turn around anytime soon because some guys are still injured.
Yeah. And who knows? I mean, obviously I think there were zero new COVID cases, but COVID doesn't help on top of the injuries too.
No, not at all, man. Not at all. I mean, only one game has been postponed so far. That was against Boston earlier this season. But No, it's gonna really create some issues. At least Jimmy is back, but missing him for so many games is a rough time for sure. But let's shift gears here a little bit and take a look at what Dallas is looking at so far. And their record is 9-13, so a couple games better than Miami, but they are in the same seed in their conference. So Miami's 13th, Dallas is 13th in the West. So looking at their kind of injury report so far, same thing, two players. So Miami had two players that played all their games. Dallas has had two players that played all their games. Those players are Maxi Kleba and Porzingis, or I'm sorry, Willie Cauley-Stein and James Johnson. They've played all 22 games so far. Kleba and Porzingis have missed 11 games. Dwight Powell has missed 10. Richardson and Finney-Smith have missed 9. Boban has missed 8. But on the bright side for you guys, you have no injuries. Everybody's back. Everybody's whole, ready to go. So you rank a little bit better than Miami in the major stats. So 19th in offensive defensive efficiency, 20 in net rating. So not as bad so far, but you guys are healthy. So when it comes to the outlook and maybe how you might perform going forward, I think you guys are in a little bit better shape than us. Just gotta put that out there.
It's tough when 20th in net rating is the better shape. That's it's not the most
Yeah.
positive thing,
Not great
but I
for
guess
you
it's all
or
relative.
yeah, definitely.
No, I mean, it's hard because there's no way to build chemistry with very few practices, short off season, high turnover. COVID got the team. I mean, I think it was the beginning of this month is when it all hit. Or I'm sorry, it's not January, no, beginning of last month is when it all
Right,
hit.
yeah.
Like right after the Miami game. And this is probably the first week they've really been clicking. And they've only, I mean, they're 1-1, but they play again tonight. And it's hard. I mean, like you said, with Porzingis and Maxey being your two guys who have missed the most games, and those are probably the two most important defenders on the team, it's tough. It's tough.
Absolutely, man. And there's a steep drop in offense for this team as well. So Miami dropped off from 7th to 26th. The Mavericks went from number one at 116.7 down to 19th at 110.2. So not terrible, but missing Porzingis and some of those other guys is going to have a huge effect on that end. And interestingly enough, the defense hasn't really improved. I know that's an area where you guys definitely look to upgrade in the offseason. So I think a big part of that is because Josh Richardson has missed a fair amount of games, and Porzingis has missed a fair amount of games. So those are two big defensive pieces. So that's still a work in progress. I have full faith that Dallas is going to get that area together as well as their offense. But here's a parallel. One of the parallels from the Heat, the Mavericks are actually last in 3-point percentage. This kind of shocked me. I really didn't know it was that bad, but they're down 4% from last year, looking at that percentage. So is you feel like it's maybe Luka's struggle from three so far that has them down? Is it like a combination of all their players? Like, where do you think that stems from?
Yeah, I've got a few takes. I mean, first of all, I think the chemistry, number one, I think that at least plays a little bit into it. My stronger take, though, is that the Mavs offense drastically changed. Last year, it was more motion offense, and this has always been a Rick Carlisle thing. It's, motion free flowing, best shot is the shot they take. They don't really force a shot. But this year, they adapted more of a Rockets James Harden style, and it was kind of Luka dribble, 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 pass it to the corner. And it was a lot more predictable that way. Teams knew they could trap Luka and could kind of get away with it. There's been a few games where teams have just messed up and not done the defenses right. But for the most part, they've kind of begged the Mavs to shoot to pass to the corner from Luka because especially with the 3-point percentage just being so low. And it's just kind of a circle from that. And I do think that it's just because they've gone to ISO heavy Luka. They know that his best strength is getting to the rim. So they kind of want to play to that strength. But almost by doing so, they've gone backwards. I think that's a huge part of it. They've really tried copying Houston almost for a decade now since they won the title. And this is just another step they're trying to make what Houston tried to do work. I'm not in favor of it. I just think they're trying to make it something that isn't right and isn't a natural fit, but fit.
Listen, I love podcasting. Who doesn't? The process is great until you get to the part where you have to edit and distribute your podcast. It's time-consuming, and we all love convenience. Well, here's the most convenient option possible. It's called Anchor. There's creation tools in the app that will allow you to record and edit right from your phone, tablet, or computer. It will distribute your podcast for you on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and other popular platforms. You can make money from your podcast with minimum listenership, and it's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. So go to the free Anchor app or anchor.fm right now to get started. And trust me, you won't regret it. Yeah, I'm with you, man. Like, Luka is a great ISO player. I mean, there's not many other players in the NBA that you want to give the ball to and let them make things happen. And sometimes that's almost by necessity. But at the same time, yeah, if you established an offensive system last year that works so well, it's just interesting that they've kind of stepped away from that a little bit. I will say it probably hurts losing Seth Curry. I mean, he's one of the best shooters in the league. And I want to say he's the number one uncontested three-point shooter in the NBA. Definitely going to have a negative effect on scoring, efficiency from three, all that good stuff. Josh Richardson, you know, coming from, you know, is a former Heat guy. Like, I know he can shoot, you know, pretty well. And you know Seth Curry, but coming in here and, you know, I would say 37-38% is a fair mark for him. So they replaced him with a decent three-point shooter. So I wouldn't say it's like a humongous downgrade or anything, but yeah, you know, there's definitely going to be some drop off when you're looking at some of the guys they have replaced coming from last season. And yeah, I think I want to say, like, I would love to see Luke improve a little bit when it comes to his efficiency from behind the line. Cause you know, we've taken shots at Trae Young for being a negative 3-point shooter. I mean, he's at 34%, I want to say, and I think Luke is at 32. So definitely want to see that at least 35, 36. Doesn't have to be lead or anything, but considering how much of the offense he dominates and how many actions run through him, not a great sign to see him that low in 3-point percentage. But I'm nitpicking. I mean, the guy is phenomenal. It's definitely a nitpick on him.
I mean, he would be the front runner for the MVP, though. I mean, I think he dropped below 30% again last night, and that makes three of the most important offensive players all below 30% from three on the year. Porzingis is at 27%, Luke is at 29%, and then Richardson, I think, is right in the middle. It's hard. I mean, it really is the difference of being that 19th and top 10. Like, and I don't think this continues. It just doesn't add up. It's never been a Rick Carlisle's team thing to just be this bad. But the 3-point shooting, I mean, it's got to come around at some point. I think I'm trying to be patient with it. I don't think there's like a necessarily root cause, but maybe the system, like, that's it. But yeah, it'll happen.
I believe it too. I mean, 3-point percentage is something that's very kind of, it comes and goes through the NBA. It's almost like a random thing. Like, even when it comes to 3-point defense, you're going to see teams be hot. You're going to see teams be cold. And I think Dallas is going through a cold streak. So those guys are going to level back up, regress up to the mean, I believe, going forward. I wouldn't expect this to continue. But another area where they're struggling, just like Miami, is rebounding, surprisingly enough. I think Porzingis missing so many games is one of the causes for that. So they're 28th. In offensive rebounding, slightly better than Miami. But, you know, they're almost down 20% from last season, just looking at like the percentage of their offensive rebounding. So definitely troubling, but I think it's Porzingis missing time, right? It's Kleba missing time. It's Dwight Powell missing time. So they've had to go deeper in their bench to try to get some of that rebounding back. You know, you had to play more James Johnson, you know, Cauley-Stein has never struck me as a really great rebounder. You know, he's good in theory, but, you know, not elite or anything. So that's probably one of the big reasons for that, just because they're big men and miss so many minutes. And I think that's going to trend upward as well going forward, now that they're all whole and, you know, everybody that's available, that's one of their main rebounders, are going to be there to kind of lighten the load on that end. So should be all right in that area, I think.
Yeah, I have some reservations. I do think they need to get a good rebounder. That's one way or another this season, like before the season trade deadline. I do think that teams are kind of more aggressive on offensive rebounding because they know Willie Cauley-Stein and Kristaps Porzingis are not the strongest of big men, and that they can just kind of, if you have like a DeAndre Ayton, he's going to kill you on the boards. I mean, we saw it the other night, the last two of the last three games, DeAndre Ayton killed the Mavs. And right. I think that's just kind of a game plan. They know, go after their skinny. I've never seen either of those guys ever grab a rebound over two defenders, unless it's guards. I do think there is legitimate concern for rebounding. And also, a lot of them are just long rebounds. And I don't know if that's unlucky. I feel like that is. But when Luka is your best rebounder, it's going to be a little bit difficult. I'm not a big fan of that.
Yeah, not a great sign. Like, Luka is a strong rebounder. Got to give him credit there. But you don't want him out-rebounding your bigs. That's literally what they're paid to do.
It's dangerous.
Yep. you know, they're getting paid to go out there and make things happen on the board. So I'm totally with you, man. You know, it's not so much as they don't have big men. Like, they definitely have big men that can, you know, make it happen down there. But maybe they just need some more guys that are more sturdy, like you said, stronger on the boards, more willing to kind of get dirty down there. But looking at the games that Dallas has missed and their top 12 players, I did the same thing for Miami. So I think Miami was like 155 out of 252. So for Dallas, it's definitely a better situation. 200 out of 264 games played by their top 12 players. So guys are back whole, and you know, I don't think the effect has been as drastic, but things are definitely looking up for Dallas. And both of those areas that we kind of addressed, like, they should see at least moderate increases, just looking at their history, looking at the personnel, the system and things like that. You know, there's definitely a good amount of optimism to be had when looking at their situations. So why don't we go ahead and look at some parallels here now? It's like some areas where the teams are very similar. So already pointed out that both teams are 13th in their conference as far as, you know, where they stand in the seeding as of today. Both teams have only missed one game due to a postponement, you know, so not a huge area of concern for them there. Both teams have just dealt with shifting lineups. So lineups that are continuously moving from game to game, that's definitely no question there. And then both teams are suffering from 3-point drops from last season and offensive rebounding drops. And then here's the last part that we need to talk about here for a second. Neither team has their first round pick this year. So there's no incentive to tank, no incentive to do badly. Got to go all out and make the playoffs. So your guys' pick belongs to New York as a part of, I believe it's the Porzingis trade for a couple of years ago. Our pick belongs to OKC / Houston. So I think it's like one of those weird, one of the weird protections where it's like this team gets the better of or the second best of or something like that. So basically they're both gone. So we have some incentive to do well this season. So just wanted to put that out there. There's no reason to be out of the playoffs. Missing the playoffs would be catastrophic for either franchise because both are proud franchises, had a lot of history of success. So got to put the foot forward and make a turnaround because it's only 72 games this season. So better now than to wait any longer for a bounce back like that.
Yeah, I didn't know. I'm ashamed of myself not being Mavs draft, not knowing Miami's pick was out this year. That is very difficult. And I'm sure you've seen this too. There's a lot of fans that want the Mavs to tank.
Interesting.
Unless they want the 31st pick. I don't because Mavs have their second round pick. I don't know if Miami has theirs, but
I don't think so.
Oh, I don't man. Think either. Oh, yeah. Man. I'm going to be completely irrelevant for Heat Twitter and come to draft.
Yeah, there's not much to say on our end, for sure. Not much content there.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to put that out there, man, because it's just like, you know, some fans, there's always a subsection of fans on whatever Twitter for whatever team that say like, all right, throw in the towel, just go, just tank. It's what happened with the Heat back in, you know, I want to say it was like 2017 where they had the started 11-30 and the season was going downhill. Everybody was like, just give it up. Let's get a high pick, you know, pack it in. They always say that. It's like, why owe ye of little faith, man? Like, just, you know, have a little more faith in your team. Like, if you're a fan of that team, like, just believe they'll turn it around. You know, we're 1/4 of the way through 1/3. I mean, there's still basketball to be played. But yeah, I mean, there's no reason for either team to do well, to do badly this season. You know, there's – even if they did have their picks. I mean, like, neither team is a fan of tanking. Like, Carlisle, Spo, they will tell you. Both will tell you in a press conference, we are not – that is not our philosophy. Both coaches are very proud. They've had a lot of success. Both have championships. It's like, we don't know what that word means. Tanking, that's not our vocabulary. It's can't happen.
It's funny to me that, like, I don't know if it's a two-way street or it might just be one way, but I know Dallas fans hate Miami, but like, they're so similar. Like, the more we've talked about, like, this entire section has kind of opened my eyes. They're literally the same thing right now. It's just Heat West, Mavs East, like one way or another.
Exactly. We're in the same situation, in the same boat. And actually, that didn't even occur to me that Mavs fans are not a fans of Heat fans. Because last time I checked, I think you guys handed us the L in the finals. So, I mean, I don't know where that comes from. But
it's one man and one man only that caused it, I think. I mean, personally, I'm still bitter about 2006. I will always admit it. I don't care. Like, if I'm wrong, I'm better.
Hey, it's how it goes, man. Like, I feel the same way about 2011. Like, I wasn't even a fan of 06, so I can't speak on that. But yeah, 11 was a rough experience. Like, I have to say that for sure. Absolutely, man. But let's look at the future outlook for both teams, because there's a lot of basketball to be played. We're only at 21 games for the Heat, 22 games for the Mavericks. There's still time to turn this thing around, and the playoffs aren't that far out of reach. Only a few games for each team out of the eighth seed. And then, of course, this season features the play-in tournament. So if you can get to 10, you have a chance. Absolutely. So going forward, luckily, the Mavericks have the third easiest schedule remaining, according to that calendar app that Positive Residual put out. And the Heat have the 10th hardest schedule remaining. So the Heat are up there when it comes to their competition coming up for the last two-thirds of the season. The Mavericks have already dealt with a very tough schedule. Fun fact, according to that app, the Mavericks have dealt with the hardest schedule in the NBA to this point. And that factors in a few things. I think it's like travel, back-to-backs, rest, disadvantages and advantages, and things like that. So it's not just the teams they play, but it's like the circumstances surrounding those games they've played so far. Mavericks are healthy. That's definitely a positive for you guys. Heat are not quite healthy yet. So that's definitely want to point that out. But the Mavericks are coming off a nice win against Atlanta. Definitely a good sign. So, like, did you have a chance to watch that action? Have you seen anything from that game that gives you indications that the thing is turning around for Dallas going forward?
The fourth quarter was really impressive. They were getting out rebounded the whole game, and then they won the rebounding by almost double in the fourth quarter. I think they actually still lost the rebounding battle, but something like that just really stands out. They just kind of were clicking on all cylinders. They were getting their looks, and kind of like I talked about earlier, the system looked like the system from last year. It was fluid ball movement. It was just find the open guy, not sit around and dribble for 15 seconds. There was a lot to like about that game, and the defense just overall I thought was impressive, all things considered, especially because they're going against Trae Young and John Collins, who probably one of the best pick and roll duos.
Right. And there's also an underlying storyline in that game. I mean, people always talk about the Luka Trae Young trade. I think that's going to connect their careers for as long as they're in the NBA. We're always going to talk about who won that trade. And, that's up to debate. You can look at it from different ways, but I'm sure there's a little bit extra incentive for Dallas, or maybe even just their fans, just to win that game, just because of the parallels, the connection that exists between those two players. But pretty good win, because like this isn't the Atlanta team of the 2 and 3 years ago. This is Atlanta that is rejuvenated, reloaded. They have a really good basketball product on the court now. So very quality win on the road for Dallas. They play again tonight, so I mean they can keep that train moving, and there looks to be momentum there with everybody in that lineup. And Porzingis is definitely coming into his own. I love to see that because Porzingis is on my fantasy team. And he was out for the first, whatever, 11 games of the season. So like I'm so glad he's doing well. And I'm so glad he's healthy. I just want to see him play a solid amount of games this year. I hope he doesn't miss too many more, because like the future of Mavericks basketball is a huge part of Porzingis going forward. His health, it means a lot. Like Dallas's ceiling drops a lot if he's not in the lineup. So another good sign, a great sign for Dallas going forward. Not just this season, but for future seasons.
Yeah, and that's a lot of fans are upset that he hadn't played many back-to-backs. He's actually playing his first back-to-back tonight against Golden State, and
Solid.
which is huge. And kind of to go into the schedule, they have a 3 games in 4 nights kind of situation coming up. I think it's their very last one or second to last one. They've had 3 of them already in the last like 3 weeks,
Jeez.
and I know Miami has I think 2 coming up. Like kind of just going off the schedule, that's the key stuff. Dallas has been just kicked around. I've never seen so many 3 games in 4 nights in such little time. And I was looking at the schedule, and I think Miami only has one, but I could be wrong. And I think it actually might be like next week, 2 weeks from now, something like that.
Probably. I think so. Because Miami is going to embark on a road trip here coming up soon. They have some easy games against Detroit coming up, or not Detroit, New York, and then Washington is tonight or tomorrow. So easy games there. And then the road trip, I think it's like the Clippers. The Suns are probably in there, the Warriors. So it's definitely going to get a little more challenging. But for Dallas, I think that's one of the main reasons why their schedule rating was so high in terms of difficulty, is because all of those 3 games in 4 nights and the back-to-backs and things like that. Like, even if you're playing relatively weak competition, those things in the schedule, those factors are just going to make it that much harder because you're dealing with a lack of rest and things like that. And that matters a lot in the NBA. So that's definitely interesting. And, you know, I'm glad that you pointed that out because that makes a big difference as well. For Miami's perspective, looking at the future, like I'm not quite sure where they go from here. I mean, I think they hit bottom last night. Washington didn't even have Russell Westbrook. Washington has just been a dismal team so far. They only had, I believe it was 4 wins before last night's win. So, I mean, not a great sign. I'm still dealing with a few injuries, even though the core players, I think, are back and ready to go. So we're going to have to see how things kind of progress with guys that are day-to-day. And then, of course, like going forward from this season, like I'm really interested to see how this works out because Miami is always in the news when it comes to trade possibilities and things like that. And that's actually where I want to end this conversation because, you know, I think both of our teams have actually been in the news for trade rumors. It's like, you know, is Miami going to make a move for Oladipo? Are they going to make a move for Bradley Beal? And similar for Dallas, although I think Dallas's situation is a little more challenging. When it comes to possibly making a move, I think you guys are dealing with a little bit more, you're a little more restricted when it comes to, I think, cap room, like next summer and things like that. But I mean, for both teams, I mean, there's some opportunities there. So anything you want to see from Dallas going forward, any moves, any areas? I know you mentioned that the big man rotation there, finding a solid rebounder, but do you feel like Dallas needs to really shake anything up in their rotation to get themselves to where they want to be, which is in position to make a deep playoff run?
I think the way they've been running it, they kind of tightened up the rotation, kicked out James Johnson, and somewhat Trey Burke, just kind of using them as needed rather than keeping the rotation large like they had been. I think that's the most important thing. I do want them to be active on at least the buyout market. I think the buyout market will be kind of big this year. And no pun intended for big men. I do think that there's room there. That's probably where I'd rather see them go than trade, just because they don't have many trade pieces. They're all the same value kind of thing. Like Jalen Brunson and Josh Green probably hold similar value, being a recent first round pick. I'd rather not part with any of the pieces, keep the turnover, just add someone. But I mean, what do you think Miami does? Because y'all have better assets. Y'all have more. I believe the draft picks are more open to be traded more than just pick swaps. Right. And obviously, like, I don't know if you saw the news today, Victor Oladipo is probably going to be traded again. And obviously, Miami is always going to be linked to him. But what do you think?
For Miami's situation, they are actually, you know, looking forward to their pick situation. They are somewhat limited because for, I think, three years, it's like 2023. You know, like, few of those years are actually kind of restricted because there's protections on that pick. So I think it's one of those, like, if they don't, if this pick doesn't get conveyed, then it's like it moves forward to the next year and the next year. So it actually restricts them as far as like who they want to trade and who they can trade. So obviously this pick is gone for 21. They have the 22nd pick, the 22 pick, but 23, 24, and 25 are protected in some way. And then if it doesn't convey by 25, then 26 is unprotected and those are going to OKC. So due to that, it limits Miami's opportunities to trade, because as you know, you can't trade picks in consecutive drafts. So I think what Miami would have to do in order to trade more picks is to have some of those protections removed or modified. So then you would, you know, there wouldn't be the possibility of offering two straight picks in back-to-back years. So, you know, with that being said, I mean, they definitely still have some picks to offer. I mean, they have a second round pick for next year. They have a second round pick at 24 and then 27. But even their second round picks, like, they don't have any in 23, 5, or 6. So it's a little bit dry on that end. But I mean, Tyler Hero and Duncan Robinson are two prime assets that almost any team would want in a trade. Yep. So they could be offered up. Like, I would love to see Beal on the Heat, but I think Beal himself is going to make that an impossibility because he has said he wants to remain in Washington. And then looking at Oladipo, I think I would love to see Oladipo on Miami. You know, great two-way wing. That's kind of like something they've lacked so far. I mean, Iguodala isn't quite that player anymore. And, you know, he's one of my favorite players. And he made a great comeback. He looks a lot better this season. So I would love to see Oladipo in Miami. But if that's not possible, at least make an upgrade in the big man department. Find a solid four that can come in there and just be solid. So maybe a PJ Tucker would fit the bill. If, you know, offer a couple second round picks to make that happen. You know, he's older, but he's a 3-and-D player. He's tough. He can handle some of the post assignments. He's money from the corners, so the spacing would still be intact. And the Heat culture, which is, of course, something that we always try to keep in mind when we're looking at prospects, is like, do they fit the culture? Yep. You got to have that grit about you. So those are some of the players I'm looking at going forward. And hopefully they shake something up, because unlike Dallas, I think Miami is in a position where they almost have to do something, because the pieces haven't come together and there are gaps in the roster when it comes to the rotation. So we're going to see how it goes, man. But fingers crossed for this whole thing. And I'm glad there's still at least some time to turn this around, but it's running out fast, man. It really is.
Yeah, no, I completely get that.
So we'll see how it goes, man. And we will keep tabs on each team. And, you know, we're linked in several ways. And then hopefully we've gone down together, we can go back up together. That's what I'm looking for going forward. But anyways, man, I want to thank you again for joining me on this podcast. Richard, always a great time, man. Always great to talk with you on Twitter and bounce some thoughts about what's going on in the NBA world. Best of luck on the Mavs podcast and, you know, your draft analysis and all that good stuff. Why don't you let the listeners or viewers know where they can find you on Twitter if they want to get connected with you?
Yeah, at Mavs Draft, pretty simple. I tweet more than just about the Mavs in the draft, pretty much all NBA. Anything basketball, honestly, it's there.
Nice, nice. Well, go ahead and make sure to follow him, guys. He has some great content on Twitter. Always fun to interact with. Has a lot of great takes. As for Business Casual Basketball, you can follow us on Twitter and Instagram. That's going to be BC Basketball 2, both of those social networks. BCBasketball.info is our website. New blog post going up almost on a weekly basis now. We have a brand new piece about Bradley Beal, ironically enough. Some landing spots potentially if he wants to go ahead and get traded, which I really hope he does at some point. So be sure to check that out. It's over on our site along with some other blog posts and some other resources. But until next time, guys, hope you enjoy the rest of your day. Enjoy this NBA season. Have a great time. Hopefully your team is doing a little bit better than Richard and I's teams over here. And until next time, guys. Yeah, take it easy, and we'll see you back on the podcast to discuss some more NBA analysis real soon.